You could tell me that the Rambam is distinguishing between them very carefully. There's a chiyuv l'shamgam riyacho that's limited to hashavas gufay, and even vashavesolay isn't health but only life, and rafi yarafe, that encompasses everything. But that only makes the kasha stronger, because the Rambam in context is not dealing simply with tikkurat nefesh. The Rambam is dealing with restoration of health as well. The halacha certainly applies to restoration of health as well as restoration of life.
So. The second thing I want to say is that it's not clear to me that the Rafa Yerafe is a mitzvah, but rather it's...
Give me another 30 seconds. Okay. Now, the first kasha is essentially kasha on the sukkis. You have one posuk in Bo V'Kama for Refuah, and in Sanhedrin, other obligations in a context in which an individual's life is endangered, but it is not within a medical or therapeutic context. If you take the sukkis in Bo V'Kama, Rashi, Tosfos, and Barashva, they in effect all ask the question, what you need the posuk of Rafa Yerafe Mikanchinit Marishus Larefe Larafe is, why shouldn't the Rafe be Marafe if there is no posuk? And there you find in Rishonim the same concept formulated in two separate ways. Rashi says that you need a posuk because otherwise he is Nirek Kiseser Gezerat Hamelech. If there would not be a posuk, it would be forbidden to be Merape, because the illness is the result of the Gezerat Hamelech, and this individual who is interfering with physiological processes is thwarting the divine will. Or, as formulated by other Rishonim, Rachmona Machi, God afflicts, how dare man try to assuage the affliction? Therefore, you need a posuk of Verape Yerape. You need a Rishus Lerepe Verape. In effect, the tutor has given the physician permission, has given him license to engage in this enterprise. If so, then the Gemara in Sanhedrin no longer poses a problem. The Gemara is talking about the basic obligation of Pikuach Nefesh, and the three examples of the Mishnah are extremely precise. You're dealing with three examples that do not involve physiological processes. The Teveya Ben Nohar is a result of the individual's own negligence. He had no business going for the water, does not swim, or placing himself in a situation in which he could easily be capsized into the water. That's the product of the individual's own negligence, and there's no reason to assume automatically that the accident that has occurred is the result of Hashkoka Profius. It's in the category of Tzinim Pachim Derech Ikesh. You can bring these misfortunes upon yourself if you so choose. It is not evident that this was a Gzeras Hamelech. Listing Mizuin Boinolo, the third of the examples, is the most easy to understand, because putting aside problems and questions concerning Yediyah and Bechira, certainly the Listing Mizuin have Bechira Chofshis, and they can either do what they're doing or not do what they're doing, and there is no problem of being Seisig Zerah Hamelech if you intervene to prevent the Redeth from doing what the Redeth is intent upon doing. You clearly have dispensation to intervene in situations of that nature, and indeed the mission is in the context of the halachas pertaining to the Redeth, and there is a clear obligation to prevent the Redeth from bringing the malevolent scheme to fruition. The intermediate case of Kayes Rossoi, I don't think is a particular problem. But because Achaya, even if it doesn't have free will, it certainly has something closely akin to it. It's got instincts or what have you, and the animal certainly is acting in at least a semi-volitional manner, and that doesn't appear to be a Seser Gezerah Hamelech. In those cases, if we have only the cases of the Mishnah Sanhedrin, one would then not know that there is Rishus L'Reisa L'Rapais, because in such situations it's Nirek Kaseiser Kederah Hamelech. And indeed, one of the most ancient of heresies, one of the heresies of the Tzedukim, later repeated by at least some of the Karoim, was that there is no permission to practice the healing arts, that's absolutely forbidden to do so, and they even had a prophet. the pasuk in the parsha Shalach, Ki Ani Hashem Reifecha. The Torah describes the Ribono Shel Olam as the Reife. They understood that as excluding all other positions. And I suppose even if it's not a total exclusion, the argument would be that if God is the physician, who needs a second opinion? Theologically, the problem is certainly a very serious problem. If you accept, as we must, the principle of Hashgacha Pratis and the notion that the Ribono Shel Olam causes these things to occur, then why in the world should an individual have permission to intervene? It is a Seisur Zeras HaMelech. Comes the Gemara and says, Verape Yerape, Mikan Shnitna Rishus L'Reifa L'Rapes. The Torah has given dispensation. The Torah says that you are permitted to do so. It's a matir. Verape Yerape, the Torah has said that it is permissible. If the Torah has said that it is permissible, then it can no longer be an Isur. This is part of the Ritzon Hashem. This is how he chooses to manifest Hashgacha. He chooses to bring affliction upon human beings, and he also chooses to allow physicians to study medicine and to practice medicine in order to remove the consequences of the Hashgacha that brought the medical condition about in the first place. I'll come to Ramban in a second. Now, that resolves the steer between the sugyas, but it does not solve the problem insofar as the Rambam is concerned. We have now two separate chiyuvim of pikuach nefesh. There is pikuach nefesh sub 1, pikuach nefesh sub 2. Pikuach nefesh in everything other than a medical context, that's the Mishnah and the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Gimel. And the second category of pikuach nefesh in medical circumstances, which is the sugya in Bava Kamma. And those seem to be two separate chiyuvim, and each one developed differently. And the Rambam is talking about the obligations of a Reife or the dispensation of a Reife, then you should cite it that the world more in Bava Kamma. I think that the problem resolves itself if you look at the Loshon of the Mechaber in Shin Lamed Vav Sif Aleph. Notno hatayu rishus l'reife l'rapeis u'mitzvohi u'biklal t'ikuach nefeshu v'imenei ha'atmoi hareze shefet domi. The Mechaber says three separate things. First, notno tayu rishus l'reife l'rapeis, that's the mission of Baruch Bava Kamma, there is rishus, the dispensation. Secondly, umitzvahi. Now the words umitzvahi, I am certain, are a paraphrase of the words of the Ramban in the Teirat Ha'odom. The Ramban there says, with regard to the Gemara in Bava Kamma, hai rishus the mitzvahi. And that is what the Mechaber is emphasizing. It is not simply rishus, dispensation or license, permission or whatever, but this rishus is an obligation. Once it is understood that this is an obligation, the third point that the Mechaber says is Bichlal Pikuach Nefeshu V'imenei Asma Harisa Shefet Domi. This is now Pikuach Nefesh on par with any other obligation of Pikuach Nefesh. It's the fourth example that was left out of the Mishnah in Ayin Gimel and Sanhedrin, but once we know the Gemara in Bava Kamma and the Pasuk which is adduced, this now is a legitimate form of Pikuach Nefesh, because Racha Yerate is no more than a Gilui. It's telling me that he is not Seisik Zeres HaMelech, and even though Rachmona Machi, Ihu Masi, he has the right to be Masi, he has the right to be pure. Once the theory is Megala, that this is not a Seisik Zeres HaMelech, then it's the Pikuach Nefesh. It's just another garden variety of Pikuach Nefesh, and you are as much obligated to practice the healing art as you are to pull somebody out of the water if he can't swim and you can. This is now just another example of pikuach nefesh. The Ramban in Teres Odom makes that extremely clear, that the word hai rishus doesn't mean simply permission or dispensation, but it's rishus the mitzvah. Now basically and etymologically, it seems to me that the word rishus in Bava Kamma has to be understood not as meaning permission, although it certainly does mean permission. I think that the word rishus in Bava Kamma means the same as it means in Pirkei Avos, al tizvade lo rishus. The word rishus means the authority. Don't become too intimate with the ruling authorities. Rishus then means either permission or authority. Nisna Rishus L'Rechid L'Rapis means that they gave the physician authority. And the Ramban recognizes the word Rishus as a homonym. It can mean either permission or it can mean authority. Therefore, he says that there is also high Rishus is Rishus the Mitzvah. It's the second dictionary definition. It doesn't mean permission at all. It means the Torah gives authority. Once you have authority, it's not discretionary authority, it's mandatory authority. It's authority that you must exercise. You have an obligation because after the Gilui HaTorah that Nidna Rishus L'Rafe L'Rafes, in the context of Rafe Yerafe, it becomes no different from any other case of Pikuach Nefesh, and therefore the obligations of Pikuach Nefesh in a medical or therapeutic context are no different from Pikuach Nefesh in any other context. Now, basically, while I cannot claim it's a source for this, I think that you find this paralleled, reflected, or whatever, in the words of the Medrash. It's just one of these obscure Midrashim. It's Medrash Temurah, the second volume of Eisenstadt's Tevitz HaMidrashim. And what you find in the Medrash is very interesting. Ma'yisiver b'shmur b'b'givet, shoyim ha'alachim b'chutzei Yerushalayim. Voyo imohem odom echoy. Poga bohem odom chayle. Omaloy. Rabbeisai. Omuli benez rapet. They wanted him to prescribe something for his machle. Oma omrule. Asei kach bekach achitis rapet. They gave him a regimen of treatment. Oma luhu. Umi higoisi. And I don't quite understand what the Sfeidah expected. Maybe they thought that Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva would dispense broccoli, and were surprised when they got a prescription instead. But they're questioning why he is giving them medication instead of whatever else they expected. Umi higoisi. Amalahu HaKadosh Baruch Omrul. I'm sorry, Rabbi Shmuel. And Rabbi Akiva said, obviously the Rabbi Shmuel was with you. So the simple person responds and says, Omar Lohem, the Atem Yichnastim Asmechem Bedover Shem Yishalachem. What are you mixing in business that isn't yours? If the Rabbeinu Shloim is the balabos of sickness, why are you trying to alleviate it? This is clearly Rachmona Mati, the Atem Matiim, God afflicted. Why are you trying to cure? Who he called the Atem Mitzrachim? Enichem Avery Malrik. So you know that's the words of this Chayla was asking Rabbi Kivner Bishmoel. Omar Leh. In a typical Semitic manner, they respond with a question. Mamalaktika. What's your business? How do you support yourself? Omar Lahu. Oyved Adovani. I'm a farmer. Vari Hamagal Biyodi. Here's the implement that I use to cut the tzvuot. Omrulei. Mibora Sakere. Now, who created the vineyard that you're busy cutting down? Omar Luhu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same answer. Omar Lei, the Asa Machnis Asmacho, the Dover Shem Mishalapo. It's not your Kerem, why are you cutting me down? Hu Boros, Vasa Kikis, Hey Reiso, the man. Omar Luhu, Ein Atem Reim Hamadu Biyodi, Iluli Ani Yitzi, the Kershay, Makaseyu, Mizavli, Nakshay, Lekala Numa. If I didn't farm, do everything the farmer's supposed to do, nothing would grow, I have nothing to eat. All of it. Sheite sheba ilom. Mi malachtecho li shemati ma shekosev on shkitzir yomo, kishen shreit, ina ina menache, shem ezabe, av nefra, shem ele, vimolov lo yishos demayin, lo nezabe, nechai, lo meis, kin hakuf, hazev, lo hasam, etc., etc. Just as you can't live without farming, you can't live without medicine. Whoever gave you permission to cut the peiris also gave you permission to take the medicine. The parallel, I think, is a very clear one, and it serves as a kind of exposition of the psukim in Parshas Bereishis. I think it's elementary that we know from the Gemara that until the Ravon Shloim tells Miriam to call he was also in Boston. That becomes the Matir Prakila Bos. And what was Matir Noyak, the Ace of HaZodeh? Who tells Noyak that he's allowed to eat the food that grows in the field? There we also have a posuk. The posuk in the Kol Eikadon of Phil Fairchild isn't just a preliminary to the Eikadat Sefer Olay Fairchild. Before the Rebbeinu Shlomo Lamasa's Eikadat, he is not there. All the Atzei Hagan, Mikol Eikadon of Phil Fairchild is no less of a not here than his the case of Asot the Sacrifice Girl. It's Matthew Paris, it's Matthew the Ace of Asot. Without that posuk, all the Mauritian would have had no permission to cut the fruit on any tree in Gan Eden. He needed a matir. That posuk is a matir. It's matir Achilles Teres, Achilles Eker. But there's a world of difference between inviting somebody for dinner and the guest going out into the garden and digging up carrots and radishes. Inviting a person to dinner gives them permission to eat what's on the table. It doesn't give them permission to go out and dig up the garden. The farmer wasn't just being faced with snatias, you know, he just wasn't being faced with terrors. He was also being menakish and mezabel and everything else that was going on. And keeping Shmuel are in effect telling him that he is a mazik who gave him permission to do that to the ground. The answer must be that a bezeas apecho trecha lechem is a matir to practice agriculture. The posuk says, "Kreis v'dar dar katzmiach loch," and you now have reshus after the klolos. Sure, before then it wasn't necessary. Or the Mauritian didn't need a matir to plow the field until the chet of the Eitz Hadas. After the chet of the Eitz Hadas, it's not just a heter akila, but there is also the heter to go plow the ground, to be a mazik on a karka that doesn't belong to him, because now that becomes necessary for pikuach nefesh. It becomes necessary to sustain himself. Without the zayas hapecho, there will be no lechem. Therefore, the Rebbeinu Shlomo was matir that, and you find the additional matir. I think that's inherent in the words of Rebbe Kiva and Rebbe Shmuel. Verape yirape is a new matir. Just as the Rebbeinu Shlomo permitted whatever is necessary for purposes of agriculture, he permitted whatever was necessary for curing diseases. If you insist, I don't want to go into Jewish, but there's a beautiful Beit Halevi. Asidar Yisrael Shepetzig Luskoyes Uklei Milas. Dikel Shaba Anisha Marti Lelomidai. The Rebbeinu Shlomo has made man push it up in my separations. Asidar Yisrael, if you take it literally as the Beit Halevi does in contradiction to the Rambam, eventually the process will continue until such point that you don't have to lift the finger. You will have the equivalent of breadfruit growing on wheat stalks. Just as the seed germinates and the stalk grows and little kernels form, the kernels can expand and enlarge, be baked on the sun, and you can pluck a bread or a roll instead of having to harvest the grain and grind it and bake it, etc., etc. The Rebbeinu Shlomo in effect created the world, and it was intended that this is what would happen. Man wouldn't have to do anything. It's only after the chet of the Eitz Hadas that this all becomes necessary. And if it wouldn't be necessary for man to do anything, it wouldn't be mutter for man to do anything. He's supposed to be sitting and then learning or whatever. He's not supposed to be doing these things. Now after the chet of Odin Rishon, this becomes necessary, and lost his love, it will no longer be necessary. But the Rebbeinu Shlomo, in effect, said that he's operating on the basis of Hashkocha, and this is Hashkocha. Hashkocha is that the land will produce Luskois Uklei Milas, and people don't have to do anything. And it's only after the Chet that the Rebbeinu Shlomo is Mishtakel Odom into the Maisa Bereishis and says, you've got to be a partner in this Hashkocha. You have to complete the Maisa Bereishis. And he's mishtakis Odom in the farming or the agricultural process, he's mishtakis him in the healing process. The Rebbeinu Shlomo brings affliction for whatever reason, so the person should be faced with a tube or whatever. And he also allows man to join him in exercising hashkoke in eliminating the disease or the illness through the practice of medicine. I think that that's throughout the Medrash. That's clearly what the Medrash seems to mean. Now, the Ramban in Chumash posits a number of obligations with regard to tikkun nefesh. In addition to the Gemara and Bovakamen, the Ramban in Chumash says that there is an obligation to heal and to treat, even apparently not in case of tikkun nefesh, on the basis of the pasuk of Ve'ahavta l'rayacha kamocha. And he also says that there's a mitzvah v'chayachi k'imo. So you have the mitzvah v'samin al amriyecho, you have the mitzvah v'shivaisoloi, and you have the mitzvah v'chayachi k'imo, and the Atzei HaLavonin points out, it's a nachrin, that if there's a v'shivaisoloi, then there must be a mitzvah v'sukha l'isalim. They'll go together. If there's a mitzvah v'hashavas avedis, then it's allowed v'sukha l'isalim. It's avedis m'moinei, avedis gufa l'isalim. Called Shkain with a lot of Lisuk al Hisalim. And those are claiming.
They must hear the
Nid. Sorry?
They must hear the
Nid. Lisuk al Hisalim, not really much.
No,
they're not worried about giving the mouth this word. Right? The Yisus, and now it's a lot. And the Afrinim say that those Hashavas Aveda, Lisuk al Hisalim, and even Lisam Gol Damriyeko, all apply to health as well as life. So that you have, how many are there? 5 different mitzvahs. You have all of those mitzvahs associated with the practice of medicine or the obligation to treat. Now, there are a number of sources that are problematic. First, there is the Ezra and Parshas Mishpatim. The Ezra and Parshas Mishpatim distinguishes between a matzah and a matzah food. The Knesset says that you are permitted to practice medicine only if you're an orthopedist dealing with a broken limb, or a dermatologist dealing with a skin condition, or maybe even an internist who's curing an infection that you can see externally, an infection on the skin but not an internal malady. That's the Ibn Ezra's thing. Presumably he understood as applying only to a makas chutz and not to a makas sneeze. It was that comment of the Ibn Ezra that was cited by the Kashkas in the Chuvis in saying that Ibn Ezra was a parshan gadol but loy ha'yavoki bedini. He very bluntly says that the Ibn Ezra was not Morris. And says the Ibn Ezra was absolutely wrong as far as the halacha is concerned. Now I find it very difficult to understand the Ibn Ezra apart from the Gemara in Bava Kama. There's the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Nun Hei that says that Latni Kolodov of Zechel in Srapa is that sometimes it's only with Sam Plaini and Reza Plaini and Shor Plaini, and it does not sound as if the Gemara in Avodah Zarah is talking about a Makas Kut as the name from a Makas Kni. The Gemara in Zakai at the time of the Korban Habayis, among the things that he asked for was for a doctor to cure Ritzovic. And Ritzovic was not suffering from the Makas Kutz. He had some type of gastrointestinal condition. Now, I suppose you could get around that problem by saying that Ibn Ezra presumably maintains that Sinim Pachim are also legitimately treated because that is the result of something that the person has brought about himself. But if that, and then hence this Maisa Bershodik, he got sick because he was probably Tanasin, so he brought it on himself. And then if that's true, then Roy Fakaboyim says the Ramam and Hikdeus come from Ribui Hamacholim. Most illnesses come because people bring them upon themselves. And if you interpret Ibn Ezra that way, then you've opened the door to include treating a great many conditions. I don't know exactly what the Ibn Ezra meant, and I don't think that we're mechuyev to enter into tkufi kimiyashikim. Suffice it to say that the paradigm in Hilchos Shabbos for pikuach nefesh is a makas pnim. Anything which is minachol pnim is by definition pikuach nefesh. So what do you mean you can't treat a makas pnim? Clearly the Gemara says you can treat a makas pnim. Again, you're going to say that you're talking about a makas pnim that has resulted from something that the person has brought upon himself. What is it then? You know, which of these internal conditions has the person brought upon himself, and which has he not brought upon himself? Yes.
Specifically, you know, I guess, the client is not used for a funeral,
No, these do not apply to non-Jews. Sukkim clearly are part of the Taryag Mitzvahs, which apply to Jews, and only to Jews. I know of no obligation for a non-Jew to treat another non-Jew, or for that matter, for a non-Jew to treat another Jew. It's one, again, this is an area, and I suppose I should say a word or two about it. It's an area in which Hashgacha of Torah is diametrically opposed to the Hashgacha of the dominant culture in which we find ourselves. One of the earliest shocks that I had in medical ethics or medical halacha was at a rather small session in a medical conference in which I kept talking about the obligation for long life, and a doctor raised his hand to the question, says, "Would you say there's an obligation to prolong life?" And at the time, I was a bit taken aback until I suddenly realized that out there, there is no perception of any obligation to prolong life as distinct from curing the patient. And you find that, I mean, this goes back a great many years, and now that medicine has the capability of prolonging life beyond anybody's wildest dreams 20 or 30 years ago, this is now taken for granted that there is no obligation to prolong life. And indeed, it's difficult to fault them, because so far as the Chiyuvi HaTorah are concerned, this is an obligation which is unique to Jews, and they have not received from us any such obligation with regard to Shef Mitzvah Nayam, because it doesn't exist with regard to Shef Mitzvah Nayam. There is considerable discussion in Achrenim with regard to whether Shef Mitzvah Nayam are nidche for non-Jews in face of Pikuach Nefesh. So that even if there is no obligation for some Achrenim, a non-Jew can eat Avram in a Chai, for example, if it's necessary to save his life, and then the problem becomes on the basis of what Matir is he allowed to eat Avram in a Chai in order to save his life. But I'm not aware of anyone who maintains that non-Jews have any obligation of Pikuach Nefesh. So it turns out that all the canons of the American Medical Association, the fact that common law did not recognize an obligation on a physician to render emergency aid, to be a good Samaritan, if I can use that phrase, that all of that is not there, simply because it's not part and parcel of the chiyuvim of the Neneach. So whatever I'm saying is limited to chiyuve Yisrael on the basis of Dina Yisrael. On the basis of
Jews and non-Jews,
any obligations that a Jew has to a non-Jew are based upon obligations of Eva and nothing else. And that's a little bit afield as far as our topic today is concerned, other than to say that I think that the parameters of the fee of Abel mean, at the very minimum, we'll forget about Shabbos for the moment, but it means that a Jewish physician should practice the same medicine when his patient is a non-Jew as when the patient is a Jew. Otherwise, you obviously have a situation of Abel. Now, there may be some exceptions, particularly when the non-Jew doesn't want to accept treatment. I'm not sure that you have to force it upon him, while you have to force it upon a Jew, at least in certain circumstances. Yes.
If indeed the non-Jewish doctors are not hired in the way that we are, then do they also not have ethics?
I'm sorry?
What gives them the ethics to practice medicine?
What gives them the heter to practice medicine? The answer to that is, I'm not quite certain. But what, then I have to turn around and ask, what's the issa?
Well, the one that we established,
kind of an a priori issa. The Seichel Ho'anushi says, Rachmona Machi, Viyu Masi.
Right.
It must have been Timlu Lechazal that Rafa Yerape is a matter for B'nai Nayef as well, because in all of the discussions in Avodah Zorah with regard to whether you can be Merape and B'nai Nayef and not be Merape B'nai Nayef, or whether B'nai Nayef is allowed to be Merape in soil or whatever, there is no hint that B'nai Nayef is not permitted to do so. As I understand it, Rafa Yerape is not one of the Taryag Mitzvahs. One of the Taryag Mitzvahs, we might have problems with regard to whether it's said to Yisrael or whether it's said to B'nai Nayef as well. Rabbi Yerape in context means only that a Chayv B'Chaveiro is tied to Chamisha Dvorim, and one of the things that he has to pay for is medical expenses. And if the doctor can collect medical expenses, that can only be because he was allowed to practice medicine in the first place. Otherwise, how can he submit a bill for doing so? Now, if you understand that Rapa Yarapa is a kind of Gilui Milsa, then what Rapa Yarapa is telling you is that this is one of the permitted activities, period, full stop. That the Rabban Shalom is not standing on his prerogatives and saying that I'm the Melech and I am Gezer, I am Machi, and therefore you have no right to be Machi. I understand Rapa Yarapa for these purposes, quite apart from whatever it means in terms of Hamishah Dvori, in the Chiyuvim of Odom Hamasik, where clearly it has a technical meaning, has nothing to do with mitzvah, the expense of compensation. What it means here is it's a kind of a gilui that the Rabban Shalom has permitted, just as he permitted Odom, who was a Benayach, to till the soil and to pluck the fruit, he is also permitting Bnei Odom to practice the healing arts. And clearly, without Rapa Yarapa, we at least would be faith healers. And you know, the Torah clearly recognizes that in addition to a diploma from medical school and a license from a licensing authority, you need the Rishus HaTorah, which incidentally leads to another point that should not be ignored. That is that if you need a license to practice medicine, then a license can come with certain conditions and stipulations. If you don't take a certain number of continuing education courses, your license is going to be revoked. The licensing authority says you may practice only under certain conditions and no other conditions. If the Rabban Shalom gives the license, then he sets the conditions. It may be that some forms of pikuach nefesh are also. And it may should not come as a surprise if it turns out that there are some things the doctors would like to do, like once upon a time it's no longer true anymore, like doing postmortems wholesale. On the plea that you can discover all kinds of things in an autopsy that you won't know otherwise, and you may be able to discover cures for diseases, etc., etc. So it should then come as no surprise if even at the result, even at the cost of the resultant inability to cure certain people, we can't do those things. It follows from the Rapa Yarapa. This is limited. It's a limited rishus. You've got authority, but the authority is limited. Now, you know, autopsy is not the problem today. Autopsies are clearly permitted for pikuach nefesh, but pikuach nefesh as defined by first Nei Yehuda, then the Sam Sofer, and then the Chazon Ish, and a few other offerings down the line. But you know, it's clear, it's inescapable that you reach the conclusion that if you could avoid all the strictures placed upon those things by Allah, you might ultimately save more lives. And so the answer is sure. The Torah gave rishus for rapes, but it's a limited rishus. The limitations may be very few in number, but there are limitations which do exist. I think that the old issur of Zeiras HaMelech applies, but remember that in most cases you're not dealing with actual food. You're not dealing with... Sorry? Kol sheyesh lo yed, right. Let me save the Darkei Mori for a little bit later. I'm not sure that that is a real limitation. It seems to me that the Darkei and Meiri is an exclusion from another Hefer Refuah, which just isn't really Meraki. But that's several steps ahead. Let's go in order. Yeah.
And the Ramban needs another pasuk besides Rabbi Rabbe to say to give him a Hefer for Refuah. It's not in critical situations.
Yes.
But the Gemara in Bava Kamma seems to be any kind of medical situation.
Yes.
So why does the Ramban need the Gehata or Ezra?
If I am correct in my basic explanation, that question is answered as well. If there wouldn't be a process of Rapa Yarapa, this would not be Bechlal HaShavas HaVeda, just as it wouldn't be Bechlal Pikuach Nefesh. It wouldn't be Bechlal HaAtar Rapa Kamayacha. It wouldn't be Bechlal anything, because it's also, it's near it, it's basic there as HaMelech. It's only after I have the Rishus LaRapa, which doesn't constitute a mitzvah. There, it's not a mitzvah. It becomes a mitzvah because of all the other considerations. Therefore, I understand that the authority isn't just authority which is discretionary. It becomes mandatory by virtue of all the other chiyuvim that flow from the other psukim. Rapi is clearly not one of the tariag mitzvahs. The others are. Only I would not know that this is subsumed in the other categories of mitzvah if not for the gilui of Rapi Yarapi. Now, the other source that has to be addressed is the Ramban at the end of Parashat Shabbat Kukosai, in which the Ramban says, Ma'al L'Reifim V'Beis Osei Ritzayim Hashem. The Ramban, as well as Ibn Ezra that I cited earlier, begin with the psukim dealing with Asa Melech Yehuda. The Pasuk says that Asa Melech Yehuda Yam B'chol Yilidoris Es Hashem Ki'im B'Reifim. Now, take the Pasuk literally, without the Ramban, without Ibn Ezra, the Pasuk isn't really a problem, or at least not to me. The Pasuk says that Asa Melech Yehuda was censured because Lidoras Es Hashem Ki'im. Ki'im literally means but only. He went only to doctors, he didn't say Kilim, and he didn't ask the Gabbai to make a Mishaberach for him. Therefore, there's something wrong with Asa. And he is censured by the Pasuk for doing it. The Mitzudis and the Bach understood the Pasuk that way. The Ibn Ezra and the Ramban and others understood that Asa was taken to task for going to the doctor in the first place. He should have gone only to Hashem. He should have only been a Deirish Hashem. He shouldn't have gone to the doctors at all. And on that posit, the Ramban says, Mahelek L'Reifim V'Beis Osei Ritzayim Hashem. In the house of Osei Ritzayim Hashem, doctors have no place. Osei Ritzayim Hashem don't need doctors. And the Ramban is, take the Ramban literally, the Ramban is saying that if you're really a Maimin and a Baal Tekohen, you should ignore doctors totally and completely. Now, most Akhrenim do not understand the Ramban literally. I'll give you two that I think do understand the Ramban literally. They understand the Ramban as being limited to situations in which, indeed, the Ramban begins of it. Came for you at Tikhimaisi, Bizman Anubu'o, when there was Kazay Nitros, when there were Nazim on every street corner. Then it was Machelik L'Reifim Beis Eser Yitzayin Hashem, and at the very end of the comment, Baruch Kreis by the Ramban says, Al Vertzois Hashem Dark Yish, Ein Loi Esek Vertzois. But when it's not Vertzois Hashem Dark Yish, the person knows he's no great body, then he has no choice but to consult Reifim. The Ramban, the best exposition of this is in the third phase of the Mishnah Melio, but it is not novel to him by any means. The Ramban then is understood as talking about a spiritual utopia. In the Zman HaNevuah, when the Nevi'im around and people act accordingly, then Machel HaRefim, the day says to Yitzayin Hashem, but in a Tkuf of Esther Poni, when there is no Chazayin Yitro, and when people are not Tzadikim, then there's no choice but to consult Refim. The only ones who apparently understood the Ramban literally are A, the Divrei Chaim, and here I don't have a citation, it's apocryphal, but I have no reason to doubt the story. The story is told that the Divrei Chaim, when somebody in the family was sick, the Divrei Chaim called the doctor, he let the doctor come to the house, go to the door of the bedroom, and then he said thank you very much and paid him the fee and sent him away. And apparently nobody had any questions about that. The only question they had was that the Divrei Chaim always called the most expensive specialist to the house. And the Tzvidim asked him, if you're going to let him treat, you understand, you get the best doctor. But you're not going to let the doctor treat anyway, so why isn't any old Telcher good enough? What do you need, the professor? And he answered, you think the doctor is the Maratha? It's the Malach that's the Maratha. And you think that the doctor is greater because he knows more medicine? He's greater because Vosgresser the Malach, Vosgresser the doctor. It's because he's got a greater Malach that accompanies him. If I want the Malachim, I want the best Malachim, what the greatest Malachim, and this is the only way to get the great Malachim. But for the story, for whatever it's worth, the story means that the Divrei Chaim didn't allow the physician to treat the members of his family. That was the Machelik L'Reifim V'Beis Ritzayim Hashem. He quite clearly understood the Ramban literally. However, that's not a tshuva in the Divrei Chaim. The only tshuva that I have, let me just finish this and I'll come to the question. The only tshuva.
Who's the Divrei Chaim?
I'm sorry?
Who's the Divrei Chaim?
The Divrei Chaim was the San Zoro. Only the San Zoro was the Divrei Chaim. He made the tshuvas, Divrei Chaim. Okay. Besides being a Siddish Rebbe or whatever, he was one of the Gedolei HaAchronim. All right, there's a tshuva in the last tshuva in the Avnei Nezer in Feishin Mishpat. which was not written by the Divrei Chaim, but by his father, who was the Biala Rov. The question submitted to the Biala Rov was whether a doctor says to eat on Yom Kippur, are you obligated to listen, or can you refuse to eat on Yom Kippur? He is the only Akron I know who is not here, the Chayla, not to eat on Yom Kippur. He says the Chayla doesn't have to eat on Yom Kippur. And his source is this Ramban. He says, Ramban says, Maus Chaylik Arapian Beis Eitzer Tzen Hashem, you don't have to listen to doctors. And if you'll ask, but this person 364 days a year does listen to the doctor, so he can't be such a great tzaddik and Baal B'Tochen. Why on Yom Kippur can he listen to the doctor? The answer is that he can become a tzaddik one day a year if he wants. On Yom Kippur, if he wants to be a Baal B'Tochen, he has the right to be a Baal B'Tochen. The Avni Nezer, or the Biala Rov, and this Chuvan the Avni Nezer, clearly understood the Ramban literally. However, if you do understand the Ramban literally, then my problem is that there's a contradiction to the Ramban in Chumash and the Ramban in the Teres Altum, where he says, Hai Rishus is Rishus to Mitzvah, and he makes it very clear that you do not have the right to refuse medical treatment. There are a long list of Achrayim who maintain that there is no right to refuse medical treatment. Are there any questions with regard to that? Having established then that there is a chiyuv of refuah and that you have to accept medical treatment, I suppose then you have to go on to withholding treatment or refusing treatment and the circumstances in which it is legitimate to refuse medical treatment. The first significant exclusion that presents itself, at least as far as I can see, is the exclusion of a refuah she'eino beduko, and my source for that is the Moritz Siv or Jankiv Emden or Chaim Shin Chof Chet. Let me first read you the Moritz Siv, and then I'll have to backtrack to try to develop the concept of refuah beduka in the first place. Says the Moritzia, Kosov HaMotin Avron B'Shem Rabbaz, Shim Reifei Mesorit, Im Oirosa Chol L'Kabla Trufa Kefinosa. Now, Motin Avron is just one of a long, long list of Achrenim who says that you do not need consent of the patient to treat. Now, the principle that you cannot treat without consent, that's a concept that is alien to halacha, at least in cases where the refuah is mandatory. The chayla is as much obligated to accept the refuah as the reife is obligated to provide it. And the Mokhen Avron says the chayla doesn't want to accept the refuah, you force him. Kaifin I say. And you don't even need the reife on it. Nearly, says the Moritz Siv, when are you kaifin? That Now, refuah habadois does not mean something that is guaranteed to cure. There is no such animal. No doctor can ever guarantee a cure. There are no guarantees. And in parentheses, he adds the word ahatomi. What he means is that a doctor who prescribes a medicine that is recognized as efficacious in the treatment of that illness, that is the refuah tomis, which is kivadoi. It doesn't mean that it'll certainly cure, but it means that this is known as a cure for that illness. In with regard to that type of medication, in Hichmer al Atzmai, Mikshash Isur Vishabis, that there we're kaifa if he's afraid to take it on Shabbos. Avli Nimna Mishainai Mahziko Larifua Biduko. He doesn't want to accept it because he doesn't consider it to be, quote, refuah beduka. I'll use that as a technical term. Afilu Midas Atzmai Milvad, even if it's only the chayla who says it's not the duko. He has no medical opinion supporting him. Certainly, if he has a second opinion that says it's not a refuah beduka. The Kolshin Yikreshishu Shemazekis Loi Isa Trufa Shesida Loi Harefe Ho'im Hesgoris. Certainly if he's afraid to take it because he thinks that it may harm him. Afilu Bechoyel Ein Rishoyi Lahafrichoi Kal Bechoymer B'Shabbos. Now this is significant because the Merkzi is saying that the Chayla can refuse not only if he is afraid it may do him more harm than good, but even if it's in Loyoyo Loyazi. He just says, I don't think it's a refusal to do so, he has the right to refuse the medication. Continues the Merkzi. V'hainu b'trufo sh'esi misanim lecho v'lishto yisachayla. Foods or prescriptions, the tzurich chayli ne'alam, shevitzimius hagub v'mekemes habilti nigli, v'afarif atzmei eina yedom u'makirom v'birur. Internal medicine. El of umtun agredit, u'menasu v'trufeis misupokeis la'atzmei. Od v'adai ashrei hanimno mehem lo'ilom. Not only does the chayla have a right not to take it, but the Yankovim says you're better off if you don't take it. Ashrei hanimna mihem lo'olam ve'enu b'teach reifei bosor b'dom v'trufosoi v'yaniach hadover b'yagreifei chinom hanema. Rak, the chayla yumachis shebegolish, yesh l'reifei hiya v'adoit, v'akora v'ruh shebehem v'esit v'trufo v'duko g'muro, Vaday loyim kifim mechayla mesarav mochim sakonet bechol inyan zayifen shenos natei rishus loyis lahapaisay kigun lachtech dosachai shebemake ulahach apio lapis musiv lachtech sheber afilu benetilas eber. The patient who doesn't want you to amputate a gangrenous leg says no more. See, he is taking it, so you can force him for the amputation. Now, clearly, this is a refuah beduko, but it's not a refuah vadois. People have been known to die as a result of amputation, particularly in the time of Rabbi Yankov Endzin. This was a highly dangerous procedure. And Rabbi Yankov Endzin thought that you were kafa him for the amputation. Now, I'm not sure if it's halacha psukah you'd be kafa for the amputation, certainly in time of Rabbi Yankov Endzin, but he thought so, even though he says you don't have to accept a refuah chain of beduka. I'm emphasizing that he certainly doesn't mean beduka in the sense that it is a guaranteed cure. It certainly was not a guaranteed cure. Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah.
The other way,
doesn't
help, I'm sure he's going to die if you don't
take off the leg. Absolutely. If it doesn't work, then he's going to die on the operating table, or he will die sooner than he would have died if you allow the illness to take its natural course. That's clearly what's involved. We're involved with a situation in which there's a gamble of Taishua as against a refuish length. Now, there are clearly problems with regard to the definition of a refuah beduka. And I'm not sure that the word refuah beduka in the Yankov Endzin means the same as it means elsewhere. We find the concept of a refuah beduka in one other source, and that's in Hilkos Shabbos, or better, Hilkos Yom Kippurim, or to be more accurate, in Perek Yom Kippurim, because the source has nothing to do with Shabbos or with Yom Kippurim. It's this Mishnah, the Mishnah on Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says as follows: Mishal se bul mesmachim lesrafilu glorish mei machir einot. Mishen noshke kelev shete ein machilu nesei mechoster kodei shaloi. The Tanakhama says that somebody was bitten by a rabid dog. It is forbidden to feed him the choster kodei of the kelev shete. The Yisseres HaKoved, maybe you know what this is called in English. I don't know what the Yisseres HaKoved is in English. It's what? The Yisseres HaKoved, not the Koved. I know what a Koved is. There's the Yisseres HaKoved, and it was probably in Murim HaGavim. It's a loiv on the liver? That's not how the Rishonim define it. The Rishonim say it was Keneg, huh?
Nikur.
That's what they showed you. I don't know. From the Rishloshim Rishonim, it sounds as if
it's the chotzer kofi. Now the chotzer kofi doesn't sound as if it's part of the kofi, whatever it is. The refuah, which seems to have been accepted at the time, was to slaughter the dog and to feed the person who had been bitten by the dog with the chotzer kofi. Reb Matzia ben Cheresh Matir. Reb Matzia permitted this refuah. Now what's the machloekas of Tanna Kamma Reb Matzia? What's the machloekas here? The simplest way, I think that there's three sheets in the shem. The simplest way is the way the Miri understood the machloekas. The Miri in Yuma, the Miri says, the Tanakama says it doesn't work. He knew as much Tanakama knew as much medicine as we know. We know that it's totally worthless. The Ein Lahakos is a mocking chamber of food. It doesn't help. So what's the point? Reb Matzia ben Cheresh Matir, mipnei shehu cheshev olav sheyesh lo refua b'inyanze, v'alach k'tana kama. So we have machlokes harochim. It's not machlokes panoyim. It's a machlokes. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. That's the simplest way. And that's the machlokes. It's an empirical machlokes from which we can deduce absolutely nothing v'alach. It's no new principle v'alach, and there's nothing that we can derive from that. However, Rashi understands the Mishnah a little bit differently. Says Rashi, the Afafi Shenegin Breaking Before Zu, Eino Refua Yimura, Lahakir Lo Iser, Behemet Mealka. Rashi says it's not a Refua Yimura. I don't know what Refua Yimura is yet, but Rashi says you can't use it because it's not a Refua Yimura. Rematsia ben Perish Matir Kosova Refua Yimura. He thinks it is a Refua Gemura. In Rashi, you have the concept of a Refua Gemura as opposed to Refua Shena Gemura, and my basic problem is that the same Mishnah tells us that even Sofa Pikuach Nefesh is taken Kol Yisurim Shebetayra, so if it's not a Refua Gemura, so, but it may help. So why can't you use it if it may help? I can't claim it's my kasha. The Prima Godin asked this on the Mokin Avrom in Arachayim, although the Mokin Avrom doesn't quote the Rashi, but the Mokin Avrom quotes Ramu, which I believe is Shitas Rashi, and the Mokin Avrom says, why not? It's Sofik Pikuach Nefesh. The Rambam in the Pirish Mishnayos offers what I think is a third shita in Rishon. The Rambam in the Pirush Mishnayos says as follows: Dvorim tmeim hem dvorim asurim yishkotzim ramoshim beimitnes gulosom. Ve'eilu k'yeshukohem enishman b'tchilat yitzra achomur. I'm sorry, I have the wrong one. Here, 2 lines later. The Rambam doesn't say it doesn't work. The Rambam says in the moyil elo al derech segula. The hakomim seivrim in eivrim al hanitzvus elo berfuah bilvad. You have here the opposition between Teva and Sgulo. Vudover Aniti, Hitsiu Hadat, Panisoyin, Hakor of Lemes. That I understand as the definition of the word Teva. What is Teva? Teva is a Dover Aniti, Hitsiu Hadat, Panisoyin, Hakor of Lemes. Something that you derive on the basis of either reason or experimentation, that is teva. Something which is skula is in a different category entirely. If I understand the Rambam correctly, the Rambam is saying that there are some things that are skulis, and those things are fine, they're not osir, provided they don't involve worrying or suring. There are other things that are tera, and that is permissible even in cases of sofik yisurat nefesh, and for that you can use even zvorim asuri. Now, if I understand the Rambam's distinction between teva and skula, it's the distinction between that which can be explained upon the law, based on the laws of causality, natural science, and that for which there is no rational explanation. What the doctor does is al pi derech hateva, he does this on the basis of experimentation, and he can explain it in a perfectly rational way. What you find as a segula is the segulas that Chazal gave us in Shabbos or in Yishaoksu, or the segulas that are part of folk medicine that nobody understands, they don't seem to make any sense, then they work. The Rambam does not deny that they work. They may work. But when the Torah says that Sofik Kurach Nefesh is Deifi Isurim, that is dispensation which is limited to things that the Seichel Anushi can understand, not the things which cannot be understood by the Seichel Anushi in terms of cause and effect relationships. So that you find, for example, in Achreinim, and the best example is probably a Shuv of the Tzuz Tam Vadas of Shlomo Kluger. Are you allowed to be Machal Shabbos to Kol HaRebbe for a Brachah? And all the Achreinim say it's absolutely awesome. And it's not because they were all misnagdim. It's because even if you believe that it works, you still can't be Machal Shabbos for a segula. What's Bederach HaTeva is permitted, and what's not Bederach HaTeva is forbidden. Even Tzilin, which is efficacious. But it's not on the basis of the laws of causality. It's not on the basis of the rules of the physical universe. And when the Torah says Pikuach Nefesh is Deichet, the Torah has limited Pikuach Nefesh to things which can be understood in terms of the Seicha Huanushi. Now, it seems to me that those are three Sheikhs in Rishonim. And that the Rambam has given us a very clear distinction according to the Miri, certainly according to the Shitas HaRambam as well, Laniyas Daiti, if there is the slightest suffix that something will work, there is an obligation to use it, and hence if they could call the Surim Shabbatayru with the exception of the Gimel Averis. The position that's formulated by Rashi, if I understand it correctly, Rashi is distinguishing between a refuah gemura and a refuah sheina gemura. He does not talk about a skula as distinct from a refuah tibi. He talks about refuah gemura and a refuah which is sheina gemura. I take Rashi's concept of refuah gemura to be synonymous with what the Moru Ksiya calls a refuah geduka. You have something which is known to be efficacious and something which is not known to be efficacious. And I suppose that even Halakha Lamaisa, the Rambam, would agree to the example I will give you in a moment. Let's assume for a minute that you are in a situation where you find yourself on a desert island and there's no doctor around, and indeed there's nothing else around. And you now see there's a cow eating grass, and you have no food to eat. Is there an obligation to eat grass? And you know no science. You do not know that it is only a cow that has four stomachs in company with other ruminants that's able to digest grass and derive nutrients from the grass. Do you have an obligation of the shtadlus to gobble up grass and attempt to save your life? And I'm dealing with grass that involves new Syria. It seems to me that according to Rashi, there's no obligation. And I think the Rambam would agree, but Rashi actually is clear. In Rashi, it seems to me that while the Torah says, v'chai b'lehem, there's a chiyuv pikuach nefesh, all these chiyuvim you want, but it's a kind of a sasa d'gonacha on hei b'lehem minnak derech eretz, which I'm using in a different sense. Hey, if you have reason to think that this is going to help, by all means. If you have no reason to think it's help, that it's going to help, then the hechad case you're obligated to do it. You're obligated to do only what the Rebbeinu Shlomo has given you the good sense to understand is efficacious. Eating grass on the basis of anything that you and I know, and indeed on the basis of anything that science knows, is not likely to help a person who has no other source of nutrition. I'm sorry? I understand. I'm taking it a step further. I think that the two go hand in hand. I don't think that there's any difference between them. I think that when there is an obligation, the chayil is an obligation to Shabbos, and if there is no obligation, the chayil, then on Shabbos it may become osur. But that the two go together. If I'm mechuyev to do it, the chayil, I'm mechuyev to do it to Shabbos. If it's osur on Shabbos, then at least there's no obligation to chayil. I understand that there's one concept. Now, don't just try to define what I mean. I understand this is what Rashi talks about. He talks about a refuah gemura and a refuah she'ena gemura. A doctor, not a doctor, forget a doctor. A doctor may be different. But I have a quack who wakes up one fine morning and he says, you know what? I think Laetril cures cancer. Do I have an obligation to take Laetril? I don't think that there's any obligation to take Laetril, even if you're not worried about the levels of poison that may be present in Laetril that may harm, even if you're convinced that it can't harm at all. I don't think there's any obligation to take Laetril. That's not a refuah gemura. We have no reason to assume it's a refuah. It may not be osur, but it's not a refuah v'dukah. I have no obligation to chayil. I have no obligation to Shabbos. In Rashi, I see it clearly. That's what he's talking about when he says it's a refuah and the gemura. Even for the Rambam, it may not be a sgula, but it's not a refuah which the Reifa was noitzi al pi hateva or al pi hachoyim. It's somebody's bright idea. It's mehechateis. Mehechateis is your help. It does. I have no reason to think it helps. Then what creates the obligation to take it in the first place? If there's a parasha barapa yarape, the Torah was not here, and hence nechaye, the refuah hayiduah, what is known to medical science, what isn't known to medical science, I have no obligation to try. Hence, for Rashi, if you want to do it on Shabbos, the guy woke up one fine morning and he said, the chosar kozeh, the keleh, is marat the rabies, I have no right to use it. If there's no chiyuv to do it b'chol, then there's no heter to do it on Yom Kippur, and if it involves machlokes aseiros, I am under no obligation, and hence under no dispensation to use machlokes aseiros in order to attempt to cure the illness. Now, I'm laboring this point, because while I have not gone, well, this, you know, we don't have time now, and I haven't fully worked it through and over on grainy, but this is negeh halachal amaisa. It's negeh halachal amaisa, not in rabies, and you know, not in the treatment of most diseases, which don't involve machlokes aseiros. It may be negeh halachal amaisa if you have to be mechalel Shabbos to bring an experimental drug to a patient. Or the only way you can administer it is intravenously, which involves an act of kavola. Are you allowed to administer something of that sort on Shabbos? Or better, experimentation. Experimentation which involves isurim, such as nivul hames, or the isur hanur of the mes, assuming that that is involved. It's part of what is involved in fecal tissue experimentation. At the early stages of the experimentation, when you have no idea that this is going to lead to a cure, and it's not a refuah yidua, or not a refuah beduka, is this permissible or isn't it permissible? It would seem to me that for the Miri it's permissible. Why not? Maybe it'll help. I think it may help. I may not be mechuyev to do it. Maybe there's no such thing. But the Miri would say, you think it'll work fine? Rashi, who distinguishes between a refuah yidua and a refuah she'ena yidua, until such time as it becomes a refuah yidua, it's a machilim mechos hakodesh. It's also to be menavel b'mes. It's also to do things that involve being over on Yisuri Hanoi. Unless and until it becomes a refuah yidua. Now this is a typical example of the point I made earlier. The dispensation of Rapa Yerape is not all-inclusive. If you don't do the early experiments, you're never going to get to the point where it becomes a refuah beduka, and you'll never be able to treat anybody. But that's the Gzeirat HaMelech. The Melech said you can use only your refuah yidua. And if it's not yet yidua, you have no right to use it, and it will never become yidua, then never, it won't become yidua. If it will become yidua through avaryonim or goyim, then fine, at that point you'll be able to use it. That I think that for Rashi, that's the distinction. As far as the Neri is concerned, there is no such distinction. As far as the Rambam is concerned, the Loshon HaRambam, I don't really know. Because the Rambam, if you look at the language again, the language of the Rambam was, this doesn't qualify as a Tzir HaNesloi. I just began the experiment. I don't know it yet. But what does a Tzir HaDas mean? Who is this guy? Is this guy the ignoramus who woke up one fine morning and said, guess what? Maybe I can sell some apricot sticks and call it Leitrel and make some money. Now, that's not a Tzir HaDas. That's nonsense. The scientist in his laboratory who got government funding after peer review hasn't gotten money for something that's the cause of a life event. Now, he had to have some reason that he could cogently explain and convince people it's worthwhile spending money to get the funding for the experiment. That means it presumably is in the state of a Tzir HaDas. At least his Tzir HaDas to the category of Tzor. Remember, the Rambam doesn't demand that the refuah be guaranteed to work. A refuah be Tzir HaDas means that we have reason to believe that it'll work in this situation. How do we know that any refuah ever works? Maybe it's any time the refuah ever worked was pure accident, coincidence, kind of close. Only that's enough. If you gave the person an aspirin and the fever went down, and this happened a couple of times, you have right to assume that there was a cause-effect relationship. That's in case of experimentation. But the Rambam, in the Lashon, at least the way we have it, the Tzir HaDas is even absent in Soyim. That means the doctor who knows a little bit about chemistry and physiology, he has reason to believe that this will work. And if that's insufficient, then who says he has to have reason to believe that it will work with certainty? If he has reason to suspect that it will work, that should also be sufficient. It sounds to me that for the Shitas HaRambam, that is also enough. However, it seems to me that Rashi is not a Das Yogi. I find a number of sources that seem to me to follow in accordance with Shitas Rashi. I didn't bring them in, but there's an Isser Beheter that sounds very much as if he's following Rashi. He speaks about the difference between something which is known to be effective and something which is not known to be effective. The Loshon of the Ramo in Yeridaya is a refuah beduko oy alpi mumche. What does he mean, refuah beduko alpi mumche? It sounds to me that he means exactly what Rashi is saying. Something which is known to be effective, or the mumche has reason to believe that it's effective. Exactly this twofold test, the two-pronged test. Either it's a refuah yidua, everybody knows it works, or the mumche tells me it's going to work. What's the mumche telling me? That all the mumche know it's going to work. That's why refuah yidua. I may not know, but everybody knows it's yidua. I understand the word mumche as meaning that the mumche has reason to believe. It's tzia hadas. The mumche hadas that I don't have, his knowledge and scientific wisdom leads him to believe that it will work. For the Rambam, I don't see that you have to meet that standard. The Rambam's standard is that once not a skula, it's good enough. Rashi seems to have developed this standard, and I see that standard in the Yisra Behetra, I see that standard in the Ramah, and it's there that the Mokin of Ram quotes it, La'aloche, and it's there that Prima Godim asks this question. The Prima Godim's cash is self because Nefesh is also day of Shabbos. What difference does it make? And to the extent that I can answer the Prima Godim's kasha, I think that this is the getter. The getter is, the chayil am I obligated to do it? If the chayil am I obligated to do it, then it's the klal, how to reshus the mitzvah, and that's part of the matter of a chayponet. You can do it on Shabbos as well, and you can use my holes as soon as necessary. If it's not the klal, the refuah, the theory is machayin, then there's no heter because nefesh from mokum sofik yisur. It's not every sofik yisur that is good here in case of because nefesh. It is those sofik yisurim where the because nefesh is mandated. where the Shurach Nefesh is not mandated, sure, the Chol may be a Rishus. But if it's not mandated, then the Shabbos, it's not Mutter, it's also Shabbos, and it's not Matir, Ma'afolos, Asurit, etc. That's how I understand that sheet in Rishon. And, you know, there are more things to say, it's La Halacha. Yeah. Now I want to go back to the Moruk Tzia. The Moruk Tzia, I think, flows directly from Shitas Rashi, but is not incompatible with the Rambam. Rashi, as you pointed out, was limited to Macholos Asuris, the Asurim. And he's telling you which Asurim are Nitzin and which aren't Nitzin. By the same token, in Shitas Rashi, if my analysis is correct, I see which refuahs are mandatory and which are not mandatory, and that's what the Moruk Tzia is saying. These refuahs, the refuah shein beduka, what language of Rashi, is not a refuah gemura, is not mandatory. That doesn't mean it's us. Now, I don't think that the Rambam is necessarily solely on Rashi in that track. In what is mandatory and not mandatory, I think the Rambam doesn't disagree at all. It's just that the Rambam says it doesn't have to be mandatory in terms of pikuach nefesh in order to be machal Shabbos or to give him the pasuk of it. If it would be bedarkei hateva, and it would be known in some way to be bedarkei hateva, even as a sofik, it would be sufficient. But let me qualify that. I think that for the Rambam, if the grass on the island that we're talking about is Yisuri, Hanoel, and this person now wants to eat it, he wouldn't be allowed to. And that's very simple, because this is no different from a skula. The Rambam has given you a dichotomy, teva and skula. But there's something in between. There's something which isn't skula, because skula's work. And it's not teva either, because no scientist told me it's going to work. It's something that somebody wakes up and scratches his head and says, let's try. Maybe it'll work with arkei hateva. I don't think that there is a heter to eat Eitzah in Yisuri Hano under those circumstances. The Rambam is saying that what is Mutter, what Tzitziyei HaTeva, Amdas, and Nisoyen. Everything else is called Segula. If you have to dichotomize them, you'll throw this into the Segula category. But there's a world of difference, as I said a moment ago, there's a world of difference between that and the scientist who's now in the laboratory and he's doing the initial stages of the experiment. For the Rambam, I think that's what Tzia Hadas. For Rashi, it's not a Rikul Gemurah. There I see the Machlaitis. In what the Moruk Tzia is talking about, I don't see a Machlaitis for Rambam and Rashi. The Rambam, whatever this Rafi is suggesting is something which is on the basis of medical science. The Chayla says it's not Kaduka. I don't believe it. It hasn't been established as efficacious. It's still in the experimental stages. The Moruk Tzia I understand as referring to his Refua Beduka, in contradistinction to a Refua She'ena Beduka, I understand as our distinction between experimental and therapeutic. Experimental means something which we're trying, we don't know yet. Therapeutic is that which is already tried, tested, and hence accepted. The Moruk Tzia is saying you can reject anything which is still in the experimental stages. I'm not sure that the Rambam would agree that you can reject what is still in experimental stages. Who says you have the right to reject that? You have the right to reject what is not known on the basis of das. But if it's gotten to the point where it's known on das, even though it's not gemur or beduku, who says you have the right to reject? I'm not sure. I don't know. In cheapest Rashi, I understand it. In cheapest Rambam, I'm not sure you have the right to reject. The laical, you have the right to reject, according to the Rambam. That's like Segula. You know, if you don't have any scientific basis for it, then you've got to relegate it to this arena of Segula. But at the point where there is some scientific basis, even though it's not Gemura or Paduko, it may be obligatory. I have no hint of the Rambam that it's not obligatory. Now going back, yeah.
Can you say annotations mean something which is going to cure it? Can you say something that might be annotations? That means annotations. What do you mean by annotations?
For a long life is sufficient.
For a day.
Yes, for a minute. Yes, there, that's what we'll talk about next time. That's part of the Hebrew flu. Part of the Hebrew flu is not only to cure, but to prolong, unless one of the exceptions pertains. Now, again, let me just go back to the Moritzia. The examples the Moritzia give are very revealing. And the general statement that the Moritzia gives, I think, establishes a certain point. That doesn't mean that you can take what he wrote 100 years ago or thereabouts and apply halacha l'maisa today. I don't remember the source. It was many years ago. I think it was in Starkman's History of Medicine. I read the statement that it was written, this book is now 75 years old, 25 years old, so we're talking about medicine 75 years ago. He said that if you went to a doctor, your chances of being harmed were greater than your chances of being healed. And that was true, it's absolutely true. Until relatively recent times, doctors did more harm than good. And that's because medicine didn't know terribly much. And the Moritzia is saying that the patient has the right to refuse the treatment because the doctor doesn't really know what's wrong with him. Machus Pnim, internal afflictions. He can't make an accurate diagnosis. Therefore, the refuah that he is offering has to be regarded as a refuah shein of the duker. Masha'ein kein, when it's something external that he can see readily, including the amputation of a limb, that, the Moritzia says, is a refuah of the duker, and you have an obligation to accept that because that is an efficacious remedy. We know it's efficacious. The only quibble that I may have with the Moritzia is he gave us one example of something which is hazardous. And hazardous procedures, amputations are hazardous today and were even more hazardous then. Hazardous procedures may not be obligatory, but that we'll talk about next time.
Continuation, second shear, begins in 1 minute. Thank you.
We began last time a discussion of the limitations or the exclusions from the general obligation of refuah, circumstances or therapies which are not necessarily mandatory. Last time I spoke about the distinction of refuah beduka and refuah she'ina beduka, and I would like to turn to another one of those categories, which I would broadly define as hazardous procedures. In the materials that were distributed, there is what is probably the most significant source with regard to hazardous procedures, and that is Shuva, the Shuva Shankiv, which is quoted in the Pitzke Shuva on the very first page of the materials that have been distributed. It's the Shuva Shuva and Aleph, Ayin Shuva Shankiv, Shuva Gimel, The problem was the only therapy that's available. We're dealing with a patient. Prognosis is very bleak. He will definitely die. However, he will die only after getting a yimayim. He has chayisho, which is definite. And now you have a pill in the little black bag, and it's a very strange pill. Either you have a refuah shleima and you live forever, or normal longevity expectation. Or if the shalom, if it doesn't work, you die on the spot. You'll die, say, sure, ishtai. What it involves is the gamble. The gamble of Chai Yishur, the limited longevity anticipation left untreated, as against the Refuah Shleima and the normal longevity anticipation of this individual if the therapy proved to be efficacious. Question, is it permissible to gamble the Chai Yishur for purposes of Chai Yishur? Now, before we come to the Shmuz Yankee's answer, I think the first problem that we have to deal with is essentially a peripheral problem or tangential problem, is what is Chai Yishur? How do you define Chai Yishur? How long does the person have to live untreated in order for this to be in the category of a Chai Yishur? Or to put a little bit differently, is there any period of time which, if left untreated, the person will live such that you have no right to jeopardize that amount of time in order to enhance longevity anticipation? Let me rephrase that a little bit. Somebody would discover the fountain of youth. If it works, you are rejuvenated and you get another 70 years. You'd be very shmeyenshom. But if it doesn't work, it's not going to kill you on the spot, but instead of living to the right old age of 70 or what's now 74, normal longevity anticipation, you will die at 68. Can you sacrifice the other 2 years that you normally live in order to gain 50 years of life, even though this person is now 40 and he's got another 28 years to live? Is that kind of risk warranted? I've purposely taken a very bizarre kind of example. In the materials that are distributed, you have some sources in Igros Moshe, in particular a view from the Shul of the Afiezer. The Afiezer was asked with regard to a person who is left untreated for this 6 months, can he risk his 6 month longevity anticipation in hope of a Refuah Shleima, or does he have no right to risk the 6 months of life that he will have left untreated? And so the motion, the question was, did deal 6 months but not more than 12 months? Reb Moshe maintains that anything more than 12 months you cannot risk for purposes of a Refuah Shleima. Then, theoretical of spiritual shadow, you come to a doctor. This patient now is sick. He's got cancer. But it is a slow-growing cancer. He will live at least 12 months. If left untreated, he will live 12 months and 1 day. We have a doctor who's very sure of himself. He will live 12 months and 1 day untreated. And we have therapy. The therapy is hazardous. If it works, then the guy lives 70 years. If it doesn't work, then he dies as a result of the treatment. He'll die within a matter of days, at least it's irrelevant, he'll die within the 12-month period. Now, you've got a very strange conclusion, according to Reb Moshe. The patient has come to me while he still has 12 months and 1 day to live. Reb Moshe would say, if I take him literally, that the doctor cannot treat this patient. Or, let me qualify that. He can't treat the patient today, because today he's risking 12 months and 1 day, because he may die today. And that's not Chai Yishur. So I can't treat him today because I can only gamble Chai Yishur against Chai Yishur, which is the other side of the coin. However, if he will come back tomorrow or the day after, when he's no longer gambling 12 months and 1 day, he's gambling less than 12 months, and if his therapy still makes medical sense 2 days from now, then 2 days from now I can institute the therapy, even though his chances of success may have been seriously compromised by waiting the extra 2 days. Now you realize I don't mean 2 days, this could be a matter of several weeks or several months. Now he's got 18 months left to live, he comes back six months and 1 day later, the therapy has much less chance of working because cancer is spread in the meantime, but now it's no longer Chai Yishur, it's not only Chai Yishur, so I can use it. But that seems to be Reb Moshe's principle. I have no right to risk significant life, I'm using the significant life as the antonym of Chai Yishur, and significant life is regarded as anything which is more than a 12-month longevity anticipation. Now, Again, a side point on top of the side point. Rav Moshe does not have to quote an Achiezer and a Diu Kal, or better, a Diu Kolush in the Achiezer to make the point. There are stronger sources. There is a Shuvah of Rav Kook in the Das Tzion. I think it's in the package. Rav Kook states explicitly that Chai Shor, by definition, is anything less than 12 months. There are older and stronger sources. There's a Bok Meshlem Yerdeya, Simin Kufnun Hay, says exactly the same thing. Numerous, or a number of sources cited in the Das Shuvah, Kufnun Hay, Shuvah involved. All of whom define Chai Shor by definition as less than 12 months. Yes. Well, that comes to point in second. Obviously, there's got to be some little story. Where to get it, Mike? And we'll see in a second. Now, if the concept comes from any place, it seems to me to come from the definition of a tracer. A tracer is regarded as a person suffering from either a congenital anomaly or a trauma such that he cannot live more than 12 months. However, that isn't really the definition of tracer. That is a kind of generalization of the definition of tracer. Rishani were well aware of the fact that some tracers can live for more than 12 months, and that there are some individuals who do not fit any one of the accepted tracers, and they don't live more than 12 months. This seems to be a kind of a general rule that explains the concept of tracer. The tracer, Sof Kol Sof, is a halacha mishum sinai. Tracer is defined as a specific anomaly or a specific perforation or the loss of a specific organ, etc., etc. And this then seems to be just a kind of a rule of thumb so that you can give some type of general analysis or definition of tracer without anticipating that it will apply in every given case. Basically, it seems to me that the Hagdorah and the definition of the tracer is Halacha Mishum Sinai. It has nothing to do analytically with the notion that a tracer cannot live more than 12 months. Proof, if any is necessary, not that it is a proof, even if proof is necessary, but there is a distinction in the Halacha, and unfortunately, some people seem to be very confused about this. There is a world of difference between a patient suffering from a terminal illness and a tracer. A patient suffering from a terminal illness, which is physiological in nature, a degenerative physiological condition, is not a tracer. A basis is not a tracer. We'll talk more about a basis a little bit later. A basis is a moribund patient. He's dying of terminal heart disease. That is not a tracer. If you kill a basis, there's a key of Mises' basis. Even though this patient cannot survive 12 months, he cannot even survive 3 days. He may not survive 10 minutes medically. If you foreshorten his life by as much as a split second, there's a key of Mises' basis. Clearly, in the Hagdorah of tracer, while there may be an element of longevity which enters into the concept of tracer, it certainly is not definitive. It's not the theory says, you kill a tracer, there's no reason to test him because he couldn't live for long anyway. He can only live 12 months, or only live less than 12 months. That clearly is not what the theory is saying, because it says that if you kill a tracer, you do get a serious need to the patient. I'm sorry, he has seen this as the concept of a tracer, and you see this in the Gemara's analysis of a geisus bidei odom, and the machlokes of whether you need a nefesh kol dehu or whether you need kula nefesh. In defining a tracer, we are defining the concept of nefesh. Nefesh, for purposes of halacha, for purposes of chumash, nefesh is a technical term. It doesn't mean person. That's more negaya to questions of abortion than here, but it's germane here as well. Nefesh, by definition, is the person whom, if you kill, your chayavim is dead. And your chayavim is dead if you kill a nefesh. That's circular. And that's exactly what a definition is. A definition is a pathology. Every word of Kumish is a technical term, and it comes with its definition. A hayrig of a tracer is not chayiv because a tracer isn't a nefesh. What does it mean if a tracer isn't a nefesh? It means that it's not chayiv in comparison. That's all it is. Now, what is a tracer? You've got a halacha mishum sinai that defines the use of tracer. you also have this general overview or this generalization of what these anomalies or perforations of organs may be. But that all goes to the definition of what is called a nefesh. A geisus is a nefesh, not a nefesh kol zehu. He is a total and complete nefesh for purposes of halacha. Now, what's the point of all of that? The point of all of that is then that Yud Beis Chedesh goes to, in terms of the sources that we have in Gemara, and even Rishonim, goes to a definition of Treifa and no more than definition of Treifa. It doesn't go to a definition of basis, it doesn't go to a definition of anything else, and therefore I'm not absolutely sure that it really is relevant to the definition of Chai Yishor as against Chai Yishor. But there are many Rishonim who seem to indicate that there is this concept of Yud Beis Chedesh in terms of distinguishing between Chai Yishor and Chai Yishor. Yes. Sir? Yeah, it's a symptom. Yeah, it's very same in Moly, so if it's Moly, I know it's not suffering from such an anomaly.
Well, that's like theory of human beings.
Oh, well, human beings again. I was going to come to this in another context later. It's true the sheet of the Rambam is the traces of Odom is not limited to the use of traces of the Gemara. The traces of Odom is defined in terms of what medicine tells us is a trace. Now, that's true enough, and that's the sheet of the Rambam. But what it means, if the doctor tells me that this man is going to die of cancer in 11 months and 29 days, he's not a trace. If he tells me that there has been a perforation of an internal organ such that he will die in 11 months and 29 days, it is a trace. If he tells me that the human being can live 12 months without the organ, then even if in the animal is a tracer, as far as organ is concerned, the organ is not a tracer. You're again dealing with something different. We have a complete nefesh, or don't we have a complete nefesh? The nefesh that is lacking an organ, or the organ is perforated, and the result is he doesn't have the longevity of the patient, he's not a complete human being. There's something missing in the group. You've got a humanoid, you don't have a human being. The basis is a human being, even though he can't survive 72 hours. Now, this same person who now is weighing Chai Yishor against Chai Yishor, he is a nefesh. The fact that he can't live Yud Beis Chedesh doesn't mean he's not a nefesh. So what is the function of the Yud Beis Chedesh in that context? That I'm posing as a problem. I cannot resolve it. My problem is I do not know how to define Chai Yishor as against Chai Yishor unless it is to be understood in some completely different manner, which I'll try to explain in a minute. And this will be significant in another context as well. And the other one bothers me a lot more than this, and it's in the other context that I have real problems. And that is when I have two patients, and I can't treat both of them at once, or I have only medication, and sufficient medication for one and not the other. One of the principles of our law is the Chai Yishor expression of the Chai Yishor. If one will have a Refuah Shleimah, then I give it to him. And the other one, even after the medication is only going to survive Chai Yishor and Kodeshah Mark, however that is to be defined, then I don't apply the Lishon Hayriyah, but I treat the Chai Yishor as against the Chai Yishor. Now, how do you define this? There's clearly in our law no difference if I have a person who is 80 years old, a person who is 20 years old. This 20-year-old is going to live a lot longer than the 80-year-old. And that is totally irrelevant as far as halacha is concerned. Both can be held equally in terms of their normal longevity anticipation. Given the age of one and the age of the other, each one is presenting with the possibility of a cure that will give him chaye heal. Now, give me another situation. I have two patients, same age, and one of them can be treated so that he will live 10 years, and the other one can be treated so that he will live 20 years. So the guy with 20 years gets precedence over the one with 10 years, even though they're the same age. That's where I have trouble. If one will live 10 months and the other 10 years, then nobody has any problems. 10 months, everybody agrees the sky is short. What about 13 months? So Moshe would say, if you can live 13 months and the other guy can live 13 years are equal. That is no question. So it's a book called Chayei Kiyum, not Chayei Shor. And I'm not sure. And that's where I am perplexed. That's where I have the problem. And maybe I should have the problem in this area as well, but I see the problem in the other area as more cogent. Because in this area, I think that I can grapple with it in a slightly different way. The Shaila, as I understand it, and now returning to the basic problem, because what I digressed for was simply a definition of Chayei Shor. What we're dealing